You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I used to be the poster child for eating disorders, but I broke free. So today I help other people do the same, and I want to help you create a binge-free, happy life without counting a single calorie, carb, or fat gram. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. Okay, so today we're going to talk about the lesser-known eating disorders. Here's the thing. Here's what made me want to talk about this today. A few weeks ago, I did a presentation for some people who were struggling with food. They were emotionally eating, binge eating, and they were in this program. And I asked them if they had ever heard of binge eating disorder. Not a single one of them had heard of binge eating disorder. They all thought that they were food addicts, compulsive overeaters, addicted to sugar, whatever it is that they thought. They had no idea that they actually had diagnosable, treatable conditions. So I thought, you know what? I better talk about this because there might be a lot more people out there who have no idea that there is help available. And not by dieting, not by even focusing on food. So if you've ever felt out of control around food, if you've ever felt like you can't stop eating, it does not mean that you are weak. It does not mean that you lack willpower. And you are not, repeat, not a food addict. You also could have binge eating disorder, which is the most prevalent, yet most misunderstood type of eating disorder. People with binge eating disorder, like these people that I was talking to, they rarely realize that they have a diagnosable and treatable condition. And here's what binge eating disorder is. It is characterized by binging, which means consuming a large amount of food in a short period of time and feeling out of control while eating. Some people will say, hey, I binged, and they'll tell me like they ate 4 cookies. Other people will say, I binged, and they ate 40 cookies. 40 cookies is a binge. 4 cookies is not a binge. Maybe it's overeating, maybe it's emotional eating, but it's not a binge. So the amount of food that in a binge is more than what most people would eat. And these episodes happen once a week for 3 months, and they're associated with, you know, specific things like eating alone, feeling guilty or disgusted with yourself after you're eating, and eating until you're uncomfortably full, even in pain. So lots of people know they're binging, right? They know they're binging, but they don't realize that this is actually an eating disorder behavior. In fact, binge eating disorder is the most prevalent type of eating disorder. More people have binge eating disorder than anorexia and bulimia combined. Way, way, way more. And there are actually a lot of different eating disorders that affect people all over the world. Yet because these conditions aren't well known, it's often tough to get the right diagnosis, the right treatment. So I really want to take a closer look at 8. Yes, 8 different eating disorders that you may not have heard of before, and maybe one of them will like resonate with you. And you, instead of feeling bad about yourself, like, oh, why am I doing this? What's wrong with me? All the things we say, maybe you'll say, oh, okay, something's going on. I better look at that. All right, so the first one is a binge eating disorder not otherwise specified. So as an example, Amy binged on food about once a month, and each time she felt like a monster had taken her over. She said, every once in a while, I completely lose it with food. Something snaps. I'll eat everything in sight. She said she even eats things that aren't cooked food, like oatmeal, dry oatmeal, or, you know, anything she can get her hands on. And she said she gets to the point where her stomach hurts, but she still keeps eating. So since this only happens like once a month, Amy doesn't fit the criteria for binge eating disorder, which requires it to happen at least once a week. So she had binge eating disorder NOS, not otherwise specified, which basically means when you have the symptoms of binge eating disorder, but you don't have all of them. You don't meet the symptoms for full, you know, all the criteria for full on binge eating disorder diagnosis. So like Amy, the frequency may be less, or there may be regular binge eating episodes, but no distress or guilt afterwards. So that's a type of binge eating disorder as well. So regardless of whether you meet the criteria for binge eating disorder or whether you're outside the diagnosis, any kind of problematic eating needs your attention because it's curable. I want you to hear that. It's curable. It is a negative coping strategy. And when we cultivate new ways of coping, our relationship with food changes for good. It is curable. You are not going to be in recovery for the rest of your life, which is what a lot of people say to me. Oh my God, I'm going to have to struggle with this the rest of my life. Ugh, horrible. No, that's being in recovery. When we're in recovery, we're in it. We're always thinking about it. We're worried about it. We have to think about it every day. No, that's why I say, hey, I want you to think about your day, not your diet. I believe in liberation. Liberation means I used to do that. But I don't do that anymore. That's something I used to do, and now I'm free. And now I enjoy food. I eat when I'm hungry, sometimes when I'm not, but it's not a problem. I don't binge, and I feel great. That is possible for you. All right, so that is one of the binge eating disorders that people don't know about. Another one is chewing and spitting. So here's Nicola's story. She said, it started out as a way for me to have my cake and eat it too. I could have the taste of the cake, she said, but not the calories. But it has gotten out of control. Every night after work, she said, she spends her whole night chewing and spitting. Chewing and spitting is a form of disordered eating where people chew food, but they don't swallow it. Instead, they spit it out. So it is what it says. Chewing it and spitting it. And it's often used consciously as a way to manage your weight, to control your weight. If you don't swallow it, it doesn't count, right? But unconsciously, it is used to manage anxiety, depression, other painful states. It's a coping strategy. So people who have, we'll call it CAS, chewing and spitting, they tend to eat very high calorie, high carb foods, candy, cookies, bread, things that they don't normally allow themselves to eat. And it's usually done in secret. And it brings up a lot of guilt and shame. Some symptoms of CAS, aside from the behavior of just chewing and spitting, include an intense fear of gaining weight, preoccupation with food, preoccupation with body image, and a distorted body image, like body dysmorphia, and also poor self-esteem. And again, this is treatable. This is a coping strategy. It's not even about food. It's not about weight. It just seems like it is. Okay, the next one is orthorexia. Here's what Paige said. Paige said, sugar is toxic. I never touch it. She said this with great pride. She only ate organic, certified by a special certification, organic food and vegetables from a local farmer's market. She was very particular about where she got her food. She even bought olive oil from a special farm that only sold to select markets. And she didn't go to restaurants because she couldn't trust the food's purity. So Paige was more concerned with the quality of her food rather than her weight. She was obsessed with the idea of eating clean, and she avoided any food that she thought that could potentially harm her body. So the idea of clean eating, that is a trend that's getting a lot of attention lately, and it means only eating fresh, healthy food and avoiding anything that's processed or artificial. Which sounds good, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But this focus on clean eating can sometimes just go way too far and become an unhealthy obsession. In fact, there is a term for this. It's called orthorexia. And the term comes from the Greek orthos, which means right or correct. And it refers to an extreme preoccupation with eating only pure food, like Paige. It's one thing to want to be healthy and to shop at Erewhon or Whole Foods or whatever, or farmer's market, and just be very, make sure you eat organic. That's one thing. But when it is obsessive, that's another thing. Stephen Bratman coined the term in 1997. And as he said, people with orthorexia are more concerned with feeling pure than with losing weight. But it is still an eating disorder. Here's the thing. This obsession with clean eating is not just about physical health. So consciously, it's a wish to feed your body only the purest, the healthiest foods. Oh my gosh, you know, my body's a temple, all of that, right? But unconsciously, it's a way for people to disavow any unwanted dirty, right? The opposite of clean eating. Dirty. It's a way for people to just deny or disavow any dirty thoughts, wishes, emotions, aggression, desire, sexuality. For example, Paige couldn't stop thinking about what happened to food after she ate it. And she would think about her digestive tract. She would think about what she called the disgusting mess that food made in her stomach. So this obsession with purity had led her to stop socializing. She didn't go out with friends anymore because she couldn't trust what they cooked. She couldn't trust restaurants. And she became increasingly isolated, where she felt safe from the chaos of life, the messiness of life, if you will. By focusing on pure, clean food, those struggling with orthorexia are trying to ward off any messy feelings or wishes. And unfortunately, as you can see with Paige, it leads to extremes. Refusing to go out to dinner at restaurants, not visiting with friends. And then people don't want to come over to Paige's house because she was making these meals that were just not appealing. And all she would talk about was the purity of food. So she really became very isolated and was just her and food. It leads to a diminished social life. It leads to anxiety and depression. Again, there is hope. You can break free from orthorexia. You can heal from orthorexia, from binge eating disorder, from chewing and spitting, from everything that I'm talking about today. All of these are treatable conditions. All right, now let me tell you about Tracy. And of course, all the names that I'm using are not real. The names are not the person's real names. They're actually, these are all conglomerations of people that, you know, many people into one. All right, so Tracy said, I feel like I don't have a choice. She described how she woke up several times a night in the middle of the night to raid the kitchen. She said, I just have to get out of bed and eat something. It happens every night, multiple times. I'm exhausted. I don't know how to stop. Tracy was struggling with night eating syndrome. NES, it's called. So night eating syndrome is a disorder characterized by late night binges on large amounts of high calorie snacks, often accompanied by guilt and depression afterwards. And people suffering from NES, night eating syndrome, they don't just eat at night. It's not like, oh, I eat at night. I eat at, you know, after dinner, during the nighttime, while I'm watching TV, I keep going to the kitchen. No, that's not what this is about. This is about waking up from sleep multiple times during the night, specifically to binge or eat. They're not as hungry during the day. Their sleep is disrupted. It impacts lots of aspects of their lives. So it's important to note that night eating syndrome, just as with binge eating disorder, just with all of the disorders and conditions involving food, it's not about hunger. People with night eating syndrome, they wake up and they feel a desperate need to eat. They feel like they cannot go to bed. They cannot go back to bed and cannot go back to sleep until they've eaten something and they're full. And sometimes they're binges and sometimes they're smaller meals. Also, there's no sleepwalking involved. People with NES are completely awake during these nighttime eating experiences, unlike people who eat while they're sleepwalking. Some people wake up, they are totally asleep. So I guess they didn't wake up. I misspoke. They sleepwalk to the kitchen and eat and have no memory of it until the next day when they go to the kitchen and they see that, you know, the contents of their refrigerator are gone. That's sleep eating. That is not night eating syndrome. Night eating syndrome is when you wake up, you are absolutely awake. You know exactly what you're doing. It's a compulsion and you go and it's very hard to stop. And it's been linked to genetic factors. It's been linked to seasonal affective disorder because bright light therapy has been shown to help some people with this. And there's also a link to binge eating disorder because people who have night eating syndrome, many people also have binge eating disorder. All right. Next is pica. Pica, or pica, I've heard it say both ways, but let's call it pica. That involves craving and eating things that most of us would never consider putting in our mouths. People with pica might eat all kinds of non-food items: hair, ice, chalk, cigarette butts, dirt, mud. So unlike most eating disorders with psychological underpinnings, which are, you know, negative coping strategies, pica is a medical condition that's believed to develop because of biological reasons. So nutrient deficiencies specifically. So people with pica, they often have low levels of iron, which is an essential mineral that our bodies need. And when our bodies are low in iron, we can start craving things that aren't food, like dirt or ice. And it is not really entirely known why this happens, but one theory is that our bodies are just trying to get the minerals they need in any way that they can. And poverty is also a risk factor for pica. When people can't afford really nutritious food, they may crave things that aren't food at all, like dirt or clay or whatever, which has nutrients, believe it or not. And this is especially a problem in some parts of the world where poverty is widespread, like especially in Africa. So, you know, as a society, I think we need to ensure that everyone has access to healthy food that they need to be healthy. Just my opinion. Also, pica is more prevalent in pregnant women. So that's because a woman's nutrition needs, you know, increase during pregnancy, and that's when their bodies need certain nutrients. And that's why if you're a pregnant woman and you're craving dirt or eating mud or something like that, boy, get yourself to the doctor because you know, it is treatable. Doctor will understand and not think you're weird. And it can be dangerous to eat these things. People with pica can be ashamed of their behavior. They think it's weird they eat these things. They eat paper. They eat soap. What's wrong with me? Kind of a thing. And again, they don't realize it is a treatable condition. Like all eating disorders, it is treatable. Okay. Next, let me tell you about Danielle. Danielle said, "The doctor told me I need to rest my knee, but I cannot do that. I cannot rest my knee. I have to run at least 5 miles a day. And if I can't do that, I'm going to lose my mind. I'm going to lose my mind." So Danielle had injured her knee, but she couldn't stop running because she had a fear that if she stopped running, she would gain weight and get out of shape. She was suffering from anorexia athletica, which is also known as sports anorexia or compulsive exercise disorder. And it's characterized by excessive compulsive need to exercise, along with a distorted body image and an obsession and preoccupation with weight and body shape. And this condition is more common among athletes, but it can affect anybody who uses exercise as a form of weight control. So the symptoms include over-exercising, restricting food intake, being totally preoccupied with weight, shape, muscle tone, and being really afraid of gaining weight or losing muscle tone. And this fear can interfere with relationships because often people will prioritize working out. They will prioritize exercise at the expense of relationships and life responsibilities. It really feels so compulsive, like you can't stop. So identifying and changing these negative thoughts and behaviors, recognizing that there's a reason why are you so focused on your weight, on exercise, normalizing, that you will not start gaining weight if you stop exercising, and dealing with the dysmorphia, dealing with some of the ideas behind this are really important. It's a necessary part of healing from this condition, and you can heal. Remember, like all of these things that I'm talking about, they all sound very different, but they're all ways of managing anxiety, feeling good enough in the world. It seems as if it's ways of managing weight, but except for pica and orthorexia, but it's really ways of managing your internal world. And when you find new ways of coping, new ways to manage, guess what? Everything changes. So diabulimia, it sounds so pretty, doesn't it? Yeah, it's not pretty. Diabulimia is a condition that is a combination of two disorders, type 1 diabetes and an eating disorder. So people with diabulimia they intentionally restrict or omit insulin doses so that they will lose weight. Insulin is a hormone that regulates blood sugar levels, and people with type 1 diabetes need to take insulin injections or use an insulin pump or get insulin into themselves in order to survive. So people with diabulimia often have a history of dieting and weight cycling. Weight cycling is a term that basically refers to yo-yo dieting, losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight. They may often have a history of disordered eating, struggle with depression, anxiety, body dysmorphic disorder, body image issues. And besides restricting insulin in order to lose weight, other symptoms involve a preoccupation with weight, preoccupation with shape, muscle tone, fear of gaining weight, distorted body image. It's very prevalent in most eating disorders. And it can have very serious consequences. High blood sugar levels, hyperglycemia, which can lead to long-term complications, causing damage to your body in very profound ways. It can also create dehydration, fainting, even coma. So it is crucial for people with diabulimia to seek help as soon as possible to prevent health complications. There's a psychology to this. It's not about food. It's a way of managing something, because we ultimately think that by managing our weight, we're managing our lives. I will talk more about that later. Okay. So that's diabulimia. And by the way, if you are here on Instagram and you have any questions, any thoughts, any comments, feel free to drop them in the comment section. And I may open the phones up later if we have time. Not sure we do, but if we do, I will. All right. Here is what Michelle said of her husband, Steve, who had just celebrated his 50th birthday. Happy birthday, Steve. This is what she said. She said, "It is like living with a 5-year-old boy. He only likes white food and some vegetables. He only will eat bread if it has the crusts cut off. He only eats white meat chicken, and the one vegetable he eats that isn't white is broccoli. Steve evidently had a very limited number of foods that he would eat. He became physically nauseous at the thought of what he considered, some other kind of food, right? He would become physically sick at the thought of eating something new. He would say that like spinach was slimy. At his birthday parties, the birthday cake was always white with white frosting. And Michelle said, pardon the expression, but I'm really fed up. She was fed up. Yes. So what was Steve dealing with? Well, Steve was suffering from selective eating disorder, which is also known as avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, ARFID. It's a condition in which people limit the food that they eat. They usually avoid certain textures, certain smells, certain tastes. And it can lead to malnutrition, nutritional deficiencies. It can even stunt growth in children. And it is not the same as anorexia nervosa, in which people restrict food because they're terrified of gaining weight. With this, people may not be particularly concerned with their weight. They just have a strong aversion to certain foods. And that causes, again, difficulty in social settings. It makes you just have a limited number of nutrients that you're getting into your body. And it's hard. So, again, as with many eating disorders, the cause of this is not completely understood, but it is, as are all eating disorders, a combination of genetics, environment, and psychological factors. And it may be related to traumatic experiences or negative associations with certain foods, which just made me think about the time my mom made me eat cream of wheat when I was a kid, and it was lumpy, and I refused to eat it. I was like 4 years old. I'm like, I am not eating this. This is disgusting. And I think after about like 3 hours of sitting at the kitchen table, just like, nope, she gave up and made me toast or something. I don't know. But to this day, I cannot even think about cream of wheat. And I don't even know why I was eating cream of wheat. Like, who eats cream of wheat? But my mom thought it was nutritious. So it's like that times 1,000, right? Just so many bad experiences with foods cause trauma that doesn't go away. And it also can lead to social isolation, difficulty with relationships, because, you know, it's really hard to be around someone who has all these restrictions and is so finicky and gets nauseous at the sight of certain foods, right? Limits your social life, limits your, like what Michelle could make for dinner for her and her kids. She was making like two dinners, one for him, one for the family. Cause problems. Again, it's treatable. So as you can see, there are many forms of eating disorders. And when we look at the lesser known eating disorders, it helps us deepen our understanding of certain food behavior. Instead of labeling these behaviors as weird or attributing them to a lack of control or a lack of willpower or an addiction. With knowledge comes the opportunity for treatment and healing. Eating disorders are treatable, and there is hope for lasting change. There really, really is. Okay, so that is all about the lesser known eating disorders beyond the binge. If you would like to call in and talk with me, if you have any questions, any thoughts about, it doesn't have to be on this topic, anything that's eating at you, anything that's weighing on you, the number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. And give me a call. And if you are on Instagram and you have any questions, feel free to drop them in the comment box. If not, I will go to some questions that I have for just such occasions as this, as when I have lots of time, talked about my topic, and now we can talk about something else. Okay, so here's a question. Can you, if one is still dieting and restricting, can addressing the psychological and emotional factors be enough to resolve the binge eating? Okay, well, most people who come to see me, my patients, my clients, and my private coaching programs, they are terrified to stop dieting. They're afraid they'll just go crazy and eat the kitchen if they're not dieting. They don't trust themselves around food. And of course they don't. Why would they? So I never tell people they can't diet. I mean, in a perfect world, which we don't live in, I would say stop dieting. In fact, the first chapter of my book, The Binge Cure, is to stop dieting. But I also know that that is tough. So I never tell people, hey, you got to stop dieting to work with me. If dieting makes them feel safe, then, okay, they're going to keep dieting. And if they end up binging, we take a look at why they binged. Did they binge out of deprivation? Did they binge out of the anticipation of deprivation? Did they binge because of psychological factors? Okay, what do you think of the keto diet? People avoid eating carbs or restrict themselves. And yes, the keto diet is very popular. Look, if people can be on the keto diet or paleo or whatever, and they're not eating for psychological reasons and they have no issues with food and they don't binge, okay. I mean, except in the long run, diets don't work. All diets are about deprivation in some way. And either the experience of deprivation or the anticipation of deprivation. I'm going on keto and I can't eat anything, you know, I can't eat anything with a carb for the rest of my life because I'm going to be keto. You want what you cannot have, right? Eventually you want what you cannot have. And then that's where binges happen. And then you think, oh, I've had this. I might as well have all the things that I cannot have. And then you're off and running and it can create a binge, or you can go off your diet for a long time. And then, you know, because we want what we cannot have, then we have a bunch of it when we finally give ourselves permission to have it. The best way to eat is to learn to listen to your body. The best way to eat is to listen to your body, and your body is your friend. When we are at odds with our body, when it's like us versus our body, you know, like this, I will control my body. Nothing good ever comes of that. But when we are able to listen to our bodies, which we cannot do by the, you know, first we've got to look at why we're eating. What are the emotional factors? Why are you eating? Not what are you eating? What problem is that going to resolve? Because diets only focus on what you are eating. They do not focus on why. Diets are about food. But we're not binging because of food. We're binging because food is the solution to the problem. Food is not the problem. Food gives, distracts, numbs, comforts, fills a void, expresses, it does all these things. So ultimately, diets fail because of that. They only focus on what you are eating, not why, and they are inherently about deprivation. Natalie said in your book, you helped me realize that I might be afraid of successfully losing weight. So when I do, yes. Yes, Natalie, that's such an important point. That's such an important point. That's psychological, right? And this happens a lot. It's an obstacle to weight loss because there are certain fears associated with looking good. And that might sound strange. How However, if you, the diet industry sells us this notion that, hey, all you have to do is lose weight and then you'll become a different person. You'll do other things. You'll, if you're shy, you'll become outgoing. If you're timid, you'll become confident. If you are doing a job you don't like, you'll get a new job. If you, you know, you'll have people lined up around the block to be with you when you're your sexy, skinny self. Well, that sounds amazing. And then what if you're afraid of being objectified? What if you're afraid of being seen as a thing and not a person, especially if you've had any kind of, you know, molestation or sexual trauma in the past? Many people, and many people with eating disorders, have a history of some kind of molestation or trauma. So when you are afraid to be happy consciously, it's like, bring it. I want to be happy. I want to be thin. Unconsciously, it's, oh no. People are only going to look at me for my body. They're only going to want me for this or that. They're not going to treat me well. It's scary. I feel vulnerable. That's one reason. Oh, Natalie, I'm so glad that you got so much from my book. So she's talking about, you know, if then statements. Often we go, what if? What if this happens? What if I lose weight and then I want to, here's another one I hear a lot. Well, I'm afraid that if I lose weight, I'm going to lose my husband. I'm going to leave my husband. I'm going to leave my partner. I'm going to leave my job. I'm going to do something radical. What if I do that? Fear of impulsivity is also a reason that we block ourselves. We get maybe close to our goal weight, and then suddenly, boom, the floodgates open and we just can't gain it back fast enough. So what if, which is Natalie's talking about what if thinking, what if makes you have fear about the future in the present moment? So what if I do that? What if this happens? Makes you have present day in the moment anxiety about something that hasn't happened. And then if you have anxiety about something that hasn't happened and you don't know how to manage that anxiety, well, eating a bunch of carby foods is going to sedate you or distract you or whatever. So the antidote to what if thinking is what is thinking. And what is what you know to be true in the present. Remember, you are not a psychic. You do not work for the psychic network. And if, by the way, if you're listening to this, because we do have a lot of listeners, if you are a member of the psychic network, can you please write me and tell me why you didn't tell us about COVID? Please tell us. I just want an answer to that question. All right. So you're not psychic. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. Remember, all you know is now. And including the now is, hey, I have the capacity to deal with difficult things. If something comes up for me in the future, I'm going to remember that I have the ability, the capacity, the intelligence, and the tools to cope. I can cope. I am capable. And when you remember that, it is very reassuring. Very reassuring. And then you can calm down in that way. So the next time you catch yourself thinking, what if I lose weight and then, what if I lose weight and then my friends don't like me because all we do is we get together and talk about diets? Well, what is right now, what can you do in the present? Maybe you could start talking with your friends about something other than diets. What if I want to lose my dead end job, but I don't find another job, and then I left my horrible job, but then I'm homeless and I'm on the street. Okay. Right now you're employed and you're not going to do anything impulsive. You're going to take steps to do it. So remember that about yourself, right? So we tend to get really scared about the future and we forget our competencies. We forget our abilities. We forget that we can do hard things because we have done them before. So when you start to think about binging in a different way, it is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem. So what's the problem? Be curious, not critical. Critical is, I cannot believe I ate the entire box of Girl Scout cookies. What's wrong with me? Oh, people knew that I dug up food from the trash after they went to bed. They'd be horrified. Cringe, cringe, cringe. Oh, embarrassed, embarrassed. Okay, this is not helpful. That's critical. Curious is, I wonder what's going on with me that I had to focus so much on food or on my body. What am I distracting myself from? What is it that is hard to be with? What is it that is hard to think about? What is it that is hard to feel? When you look at that, then you know your why. Because it's the why that makes all the difference when it comes to not binge eating, to normalizing your relationship with food. You got to know why. Why are you doing it? And when you know why, then you can address that. Then you can realize, oh, I'm eating that so I don't feel this. Or I'm eating that so I don't think about this. I'm thinking about my weight and I'm obsessing over it and I'm planning, you know, every meal to the macro so I don't think about this other thing that's bothering me in my life. So, because focusing on food, focusing on weight is a distraction from other things. And sometimes those other things are really hard to be with. But it's important to remember, you can process what you feel. You can process what you're thinking about. You can face things that you don't want to face when you approach yourself as you would a friend. A lot of people are lovely to their friends. Friends going through a tough time. Oh, let's talk about it. Let me help you come up with solutions or just recognize this is tough. I'm sorry. It's really hard to go through this. Of course you're upset. How could you not be? Here are some suggestions. What can I do for you, right? Oh, so wonderful to other people. But to themselves, when they're going through a tough time, it's, you know, what's, you know, like, ugh, get away from this feeling. What's in the kitchen? Let's go to the drive-thru. I can't think about this. Or, oh my God, I just ate that. What's wrong with me? You suck. You're disgusting. You're this, you're that. People say horrible things to themselves, especially in the second person you voice. So I challenge you to treat yourself as you would treat a friend. If you wouldn't say it to a friend, to someone you care about, don't say it to yourself. If your friend came to you and said, oh my God, I just ate an entire pint of ice cream. I don't know what my problem is. I can't believe I did that. You would not say to your friend, oh, you are disgusting. I can't believe you did that either. That is gross. Girl, you are disgusting. Ew. No, you'd say, okay, so something must have been bothering you. You ate the ice cream. Look, there's a reason for it. What's going on with you? Oh, let me remember my food mood formula. Ice cream needs means you need comfort. Like, how can I be comforting to you? Right? So why don't you talk to yourself in that way? How about that? Okay, so, you know, when we look at what your fears are, what your conflicts are, what are the thoughts you don't want to think, and really bravely start addressing those, everything with food changes. It is a lot easier to focus on food than to focus on what is eating at you. It is a lot easier to focus on your weight than it is to focus on what is weighing on you. But it is very important to look at what's eating at you, to look at what's weighing on you, and to cultivate, not just identifying it, but cultivating a kind, loving, supportive, encouraging response to yourself. And I have heard many people say to me, oh, well, I can't be too nice to myself. Why not? What's too nice? Do you say you can't be too nice to other people? No. I can't be too nice to myself because, you know, I have to motivate myself. Yeah, well, you know, we are not motivated by meanness. If we were motivated by meanness, we'd be mean to everybody. Be nice to yourself. We get a lot farther in life when we do so with kindness to ourselves and to each other. Compassion, kindness. If you're doing something that you don't want to do or you're not doing something you want to do, if you're turning to food, you don't know why, there's always a reason. If you're not doing something you want to do, like exercise, there's always a reason. Sometimes that reason is mundane, like you're exhausted and you didn't get enough sleep. And sometimes that reason is you are afraid to take care of yourself. You're afraid, or you're afraid to go to the gym and be seen, or you're afraid to, so in which case, be an observer. Instead of eyes on you, think eyes out. What do you think of people? Not what do people think of you. Remember, you're not a mind reader. You're not psychic and you're not a mind reader. You know, and often we think that people are looking at us thinking terrible things, and the terrible things we think other people are thinking are actually our own terrible things that we think. And if they are thinking of terrible things, well, that makes them not a very nice person. So who cares what a not very nice person thinks of you? Just saying. So the key to changing your relationship with food is changing your relationship with you. Giving up deprivation, and that means any kind of diets. Diets, some people have to be on, I guess, you know, restricted food because of health issues. As someone with an autoimmune disease, I am one of those people, and it's hard. You always want the thing you can't have. But if you are not restricting food because of health issues, and you are restricting certain types of food because you are on a diet, you are setting yourself up for failure. Diets don't work in the long run. Actually, and I'm going to be doing a show on this in a few weeks. Actually, diets make you gain weight in the long run. It's true. In the long run, diets always make you gain weight. I shouldn't say always. There's a small percentage of people who go on diets and keep the weight off, but that percentage is super small. And by the way, you know, the weight gain, the regain weight for weight loss surgery is something like 98%. Diets don't work. And I can't tell you how many people have come to me after gastric bypasses, sleeves, whatever, what have you. And they lost weight and they started gaining it back again. And they realized, oh, it was never about the food. It was about something else. Got to figure out why you're eating, not focus on what you're eating. And you got to cultivate a kind response to yourself. So to create change, identify the why. What are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you conflicted about? What's your fear? What's going on? What problem is this food resolving for you? What are you distracting from? Then express that. Express how you feel. Express your hope and your fear about whatever the situation is. Or just express your truth. Sometimes there's not a hope. Sometimes there's just a fear. Sometimes it's just, duh. Sometimes it's just sad, right? Express that. The only way to get rid of feelings is to feel them. And the last part is to respond to yourself in a kind way. Validate, acknowledge, reassure yourself. Be that friend to yourself. That is the strategy. It sounds simple. It's not. You got to kind of deconstruct the way that you have always thought about yourself, thought about food, thought about a lot of things, and construct a new way of being. But it is possible. And then when you do it, you are liberated. You are free. You are not in recovery. You don't think about food except, what am I going to eat for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks? And it has to be good. That is the way out of this. And it is possible. And remember, the diet industry sells us the illusion that losing weight will change our lives. $60 billion industry. How do you think it keeps itself going? Not by giving you a diet that works. What kind of industry would do well if it gave you something that resolved your problem? No, it gives you diet that doesn't work because diets don't work. So it can then sell you something else next year. And it also sells us the illusion that people will like us better if we lose weight, that we'll somehow be a better versions of us if we lose weight. It's an illusion. We can't make people like us better if we lose weight. We can't gain confidence by losing weight. We do not have that superpower. What a superpower that would be. Oh, I lose weight and I'm a changed person. I can get people to like me by losing weight. I can get over my shyness by losing weight. This is not the case. And it is part of the grand illusion that the $60 billion diet industry sells us. So don't fall for the sales technique. Remember, when you focus on what's eating at you, from a place of being a friend to yourself, instead of focusing on what you are eating, you will break free from binging. You will find that liberation by changing your relationship with yourself. You will change your relationship with food forever. Okay. That is the show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am Dr. Nina Seville Rocklin, psychoanalyst, and I am here to help you create a binge-free, happy life. I am live here on LA Talk Radio every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, also live streaming on Instagram, and you can listen later wherever you get podcasts. For a deeper dive into this topic and many others, check out my book, The Binge Cure, 7 Steps to Outsmart Emotional Eating. It is available on Amazon in every format, including Audible, in which I read it to you. So stay curious, not critical. I'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Seville Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.